I'm Brandi Cruz, today on Undivided. A big day for Washingtonians who feel overtaxed.
And this particular tax, it doesn't just hit you in the gas tank.
Plus, vindication for our friend Jonathan Cho.
You know, you're touching me.
And a serious blow to government transparency shows the true consequences of one-party rule. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support the show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello, 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 and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Somebody just said in the live chat, Happy Taco Tuesday, Brandi and Daryl. I like where your brain's at. I'm always excited about tacos and food. We do have an important interview coming up. Brian Haywood, who is the mastermind behind the initiative that is being turned in as we speak to repeal Washington State's cap and trade program, which has sent gas prices skyrocketing for working class people. He's going to be joining us to talk about the next steps from here and where his other common sense initiatives are at in the signature gathering process. So we'll have that conversation with Brian Haywood coming up momentarily. But I had to start with this one today because it just tickled me. Our friend Jonathan Cho, we've talked about you know, he's out a lot at some of these protests that are happening, at some of the riots, and the activists really, really hate Jonathan Cho. You know, back in the day when I was at Fox 13, I thought no one was hated more by the fringe activists in Seattle than me, but Jonathan Cho now has me officially topped. And I'll tell you, I'm worried about the guy, and I'm worried about his safety. But we talked about on the show a couple weeks ago how Jonathan Cho was at one of these pro-Palestine / pro-Hamas rallies. This one was at Westlake Park when he was pursued by a guy who was chasing him around, you know, didn't want him there, was harassing him. And it ended with Jonathan Cho saying that this guy had run into the back of him while he was trying to leave. Let's play a little clip of the interaction.
Johnny, wait, come on. Hold up. Hi, buddy. What's my name, Johnny? Johnny Cho, I'm so glad you're here, bro.
Hey, you know you're touching me?
No warning.
Okay. Don't touch me again.
Johnny tried to do the thing again where like, oh.
As long as you don't touch me, it's all good. Hey, thanks for like assaulting me now.
So you had this guy, Gabriel Jones, who Jonathan had seen at multiple protests before. For instance, Gabriel Jones was one of the people who, in my opinion, was violating state law by harassing signature gatherers for Referendum 101, which aimed to repeal Senate Bill 5599. So anyway, it was very clear from Jonathan's video that Gabriel Jones, this far-left activist, was pursuing him, was harassing him, was following him around. And then Jonathan Cho's video stopped after, you know, this guy had run into the back of him. Well, after that interaction, Gabriel Jones actually had the audacity to file for a restraining order, a temporary order of protection against Jonathan Cho. And he, the whole thing was hilarious. He claimed he was part of a security team at the protest and that Jonathan Cho was informed he was not welcome there, as if that's your right. And by security, you mean just a far left agitator who doesn't want people like Jonathan Cho documenting your hate and vitriol. But then he claimed that Jonathan Cho punched him in the face, which, look, he says it happened after Jonathan Cho's video stopped. I wasn't there. Jonathan Cho says, I did not punch this guy in the face. But what we said at the time, that this was actually incredibly, it had much more to do and why we talked about on the show than just Jonathan Cho and some weird far left agitator. This was very clearly a tactic to silence Jonathan Cho, to keep him away from covering some of these hateful rallies. Because think about it, if the temporary order of protection were successful and Jonathan Cho was prohibited from being, I don't know, what is it, 500 yards from this guy or whatever it is these days for protection order, then that would prohibit Jonathan Cho from being able to cover any of these rallies, any of these pro-terrorist rallies or whatever the far left in Seattle wants to protest on any given day. So I was incredibly worried about it at the time and worried about if a judge, you know, sided with this agitator, what it could mean for freedom of the press in Seattle and whether it's a tactic they would continue to employ if they found it to be effective. I'm happy to report, however, that our friend Jonathan Cho has been vindicated in a court of law. Jonathan Cho taking to Twitter saying, Monday morning, a King County commissioner denied Gabriel Jones's request for a protection order against me. The commissioner basically said Jones acted as a vigilante security guard at a pro-Palestine rally last month. True. He went on to say this incident escalated because of Jones's actions that day. The commissioner even said I had a right to defend myself after the far-left activist grabbed my jacket. In closing, the court sent a strong message today, you will not stop my reporting. Other militant activists targeting journalists are also now on notice. My advice to other reporters, know your rights, record at all times, never surrender. So I'm very proud of Jonathan Cho, his employers at the Discovery Institute, for standing behind him. And again, I think he's right in that if this had been successful and it landed in front of, the right commissioner who was going to approve it, that it could have had a really chilling impact on a free press in Seattle if these activists found out, oh, we can leverage the criminal justice system. We can politicize the criminal justice system to our benefit. So happy for you, Jonathan Cho. I don't know. Yes, there was also some sort of effort to see if he could be charged criminally. This kid said, you know, he got punched in the face. I don't know where that's at, but I would assume that if this was denied, that that's sort of a non-issue. But Jonathan Cho does have a right to defend himself. These people harass him. They stalk him around. They block his cameras. They physically assaulted him on numerous occasions. And as a member of the press, you don't have to just sit there and take it. And so I'm glad that Jonathan Cho fought back in a court of law. All right, again, before we get to this interview with Brian Haywood on what I think is the blockbuster news this week, and thankfully, a lot of mainstream media is also covering it, which is really good. I just wanted to update you on one of the kind of lingering key races from the November election that I gotta say, I was just holding out hope, like, please, something change. And it had to do with Initiative Number One in Tacoma, which, as you know, is an anti-landlord initiative that would put into play some really, really strict tenant protections in Tacoma. It does look like now that this has been decided, and just by the narrowest of margins, there are simply not enough ballots left to count to change the outcome. So as of this moment, 50.42% of voters in Tacoma are passing Initiative Number One, 49.58. Oh my gosh, that just, it hurts that it's passing, but it hurts even more when we had to extend 2 decimal points to show you just how close it was. And I mean, the impact of this is going to be chilling. And I cannot overstate that, because we've seen what's been happening in Seattle. You know, Shama Sawant, the socialist Seattle City Councilwoman, has made it her mission before she leaves office to push through all these tenant protections. And I'm all for making sure that landlords aren't taking advantage of tenants or making life difficult for tenants. I do think that happens. I think it's the exception, not the rule. And some of these really, really strict tenant protections are making it nearly impossible for landlords to evict someone for non-payment of rent or for being just a general terrible tenant. You know, that is something that started in earnest during the pandemic that maybe for a period of time made sense to say, hey, you got a lot of people in a tough situation in the middle of a pandemic. We can't kick them out on the streets. But, you know, to see how that sort of the ball that started rolling during the pandemic and now just going downhill at 100 miles an hour, it's going to have a disastrous impact on affordable housing in Seattle and Tacoma. And it's also going to have a disastrous impact on landlords who are going to pull up stakes and go somewhere else or sell their house entirely and say it's not worth it anymore. So I just wanted to, now that this has been decided officially, I know it's not been certified, but it's just not possible to change the results. So let's go through what this does so you truly understand, because some of these protections for tenants are even more strict than what's happening in the city of Seattle. So when it comes to rent increases, this initiative requires expanded notice. So you have to, if you want to hike rent as a landlord, you have to give 2 notices. One, at least 6 months in advance. The current law had at 4 months. And the second one, at least 3 months in advance. So a lot of advance notice if you want to raise rent. The second one, this to me is the most egregious, because I just, for the life of me, can't understand how anyone would vote for this and not see the consequences of it. So if a landlord raises rent by 5% or more, and a tenant says, well, I can't afford that, so I'm going to have to move out, the landlord has to pay relocation assistance. for that tenant if the tenant requests it. So that assistance could be anywhere from 2 months to 3 months of relocation assistance, depending on whether the rent increase is above 5% or 10%. So think about that. If you have to raise the rent more than 10%, maybe it's because, you know, of all the taxes that are being passed, and you as a landlord are going to have to pass that on to your tenants, which is a reality in cities like Seattle and Tacoma. Think about that. You'd have to pay 3 months, not only relocation costs, but 3 months rent for this person to go live somewhere else. That's not sustainable. That's not tenable. As far as fees go, there's also some limitations on, for instance, you have to cap late fees at $10 a month. Let's say you're a small-time landlord and you rely on getting paid by your tenant to pay your mortgage. Do you think the banks are going to cap their late fees for your mortgage payment to $10 a month? No, I don't think so. Also, some eviction limits. You know, to me, I can see some of the arguments for this. And I know it feels good and sounds good to say, hey, if you've got a family with kids, you can't evict them during the school year. Or if you've got someone who's not paying rent, you can't evict them during the winter months. Look, I get it. And I don't think, again, exception, not the rule. I don't think there are a lot of landlords out there who want to throw out, you know, a single mom and her kids, her school kids, in the middle of winter, in the middle of a school year. I mean, laws like this, they assign the worst of intentions to every person. That really is what it's about. Assigning, punishing all landlords for maybe the one-off instances where there has been true wrongdoing from a landlord, or where they were so callous or heartless or whatever it is. But to suggest that if someone is just not paying rent, and then for what is a school year these days, Daryl? Is it 9 months? Eight to nine months? For a school year, I think?
Yeah, yeah.
So you they could...
last most of the year.
Yeah, if you want to take advantage of...
I feel like the summers are getting like shorter and shorter also.
That's true. Yeah. But if you want to take advantage of that, you know, again, they're not assigning the worst of intentions to tenants, just to landlords. But to suggest that there aren't tenants who would take advantage of that by saying, hey, I got school kids, so I'm not going to pay rent from, you know, September all the way to May. And then they can't evict me because I have school kids and it's during a school year, even if I can absolutely pay. And then I'll just leave and start all over again somewhere else. It's really, really crazy stuff. And I think one of the things that bothers me so much about it, besides it assigning the worst intentions to every single landlord, regardless of whether they have one unit or 2,000 units, is you hear from Democrats so much about, oh, we're in a crisis of affordable housing. What do you think this is going to do to the crisis of affordable housing? You know, we've heard these horror stories. We had this Jason Roth on the show, the Seattle landlord who he's got a guy who hasn't paid him rent at all and is listing part of his home on Airbnb, even though the guy's up on social media posting pictures from yachts and on lavish vacations, isn't paying Jason Roth a single cent. And Jason's like, I've operated my rental property as basically a low income, affordable options. I've rented beds to friends and all this. And he's like, and this is how I'm being treated by the system. So this stuff is going to, if you truly, truly think that we're in an affordable housing crisis, this is going to make it much worse. This is going to make it so much worse, which is why I really don't think that these leaders who push for this care about affordable housing. I think that's just a way for them to go to voters and say, oh, affordable housing, that's what's causing our homeless crisis. Give us more money that we can go feed to, you know, our supporters to work on the homeless crisis. And then it never gets better and feed into the homeless industrial complex. I mean, more and more, I am red-pilled by the day on all of this stuff. It's just wild. So really disappointing to see that pass in the city of Tacoma. I know some of this stuff makes us feel good. Like, oh yeah, don't put people out in the cold, you know, Ebenezer Scrooge or whatever it is. But that's just not the reality of what is happening by and large. So super disappointing. All right, coming up next, we'll get to our interview with Brian Haywood, the man behind the now very realistic effort to repeal Governor Jay Inslee's cap and trade program, which has sent gas prices skyrocketing. But first, if you're considering putting your home on the market, go ahead, reach out to a few real estate agents. Maybe you saw a real estate agent on a bus somewhere, a little sign on a bus, and you thought, oh, they look like a nice person. Reach out to the bus real estate agent for all I care. But don't choose one until you have reached out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. He's been doing this for a long, long time in our area, and he and his team have a lot of innovative offerings that you're not going to find anywhere else, like their Listing Boost concierge service. So if you need something done to your home, for instance, before you put it on the market, not only can they help manage that project, take it completely off your hands, they could even help pay for it upfront.
there is a certain dollar amount that I can go to. Mm. If there is something that is bigger than that, we do have some other resources that are available that we can tie into, kind of like a line of credit. But there hasn't been anything that we have not been able to handle yet. And if you guys have questions, you know, let me know. And if you've got a project, you're like, gosh, can this guy handle or not? Just fire it over. I'd love to have that conversation and have somebody stump me with something.
Yeah, he's the son of a builder, so he actually gets a lot of joy out of those projects as well, and it takes so much stress off the plate of home sellers. So go to sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com. Go ahead, talk to him about the Listing Boost Concierge service. Also, make sure to ask him for a free market analysis. We know that the real estate market isn't at its peak right now, certainly, so you want to know if your home is well-positioned, depending on where you live. So ask him about that, but start by simply using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth, because it might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwest.com. A better way to sell your home. All right, $418,399. That is the number of signatures being turned in today to try to lower gas prices for working class Washingtonians. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action by visiting future42.org. We talked about this on the show yesterday. Initiative 2117. Would repeal Washington State's cap and trade program. And what the cap and trade program has done, we know, is it has increased prices at the pump for everyone, but it's really hit working class Washingtonians hard. And not only that, it obviously increases prices at the grocery store. You're probably noticing that. If you're a Puget Sound Energy customer, your rates have also gone up as a result of Governor Jay Inslee's cap and trade program. So today, signatures are being turned in for Initiative 2117, which has been led by Brian Haywood at Let's Go Washington. They announced that they'd collected the signature threshold. They'd reached the signature threshold during a press conference just a couple hours ago. Gotta love the visual of the boxes and boxes and boxes of signatures from people in Washington State who are saying this thing has got to go. We are really struggling under the weight of this hidden gas tax. So Brian Haywood, before he went off to the gas station to announce the good news, stopped by Undivided to talk to us about where this initiative goes from here. It doesn't surprise me that the carbon tax, gas tax thing is the first to reach the threshold and be turned in. Does it surprise you?
Once we got going, no. At first, we kind of threw it in at the last minute as the last one because they'd stuck this thing in and it was a gas tax. And we were already getting hit by the gas tax and people were feeling upset. And so we thought, well, let's put this one in. And as soon as we got it out there, that was the one. I mean, people were just mad. They were mad, and it wasn't just mad. It wasn't like mad because I don't like it. It was mad because I'm making a choice between groceries and gas sometimes, right? Yeah. It was that kind of mad, and it was a frustration. So as soon as we got it out there, we realized, oh my gosh, this is the one that's got people fired up.
Yeah. So you obviously are comfortable enough with your signature threshold to turn them in. I know you're still going to collect signatures,
yes.
But what did you need, and approximately where are you at?
So my goal was to get, begin turning them in as soon as we got 400,000.
Okay.
So you need 324,000 and change. They recommend you get 400 to 405,000.
Gotcha.
And so we wanted to start turning things in as soon as we hit 400. We'll be well over 400,000 on this one.
Yeah, and that extra buffer, it accounts for maybe people who signed it who weren't registered voters.
Correct.
People who signed it twice.
Correct.
Et cetera. Let me ask
Mickey Mouse.
Before Mickey Mouse, people who did it just to troll you.
Right.
How do I put this delicately, if I even need to? I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, that high gas prices make or break your pocketbook personally.
Right, right.
I always try to be delicate about, like, you're doing well financially,
right.
You know? Yeah. So why, I guess, and this goes for a lot of the things that you're collecting signatures on, why is this something that you would dedicate your time to when high gas prices don't impact you personally?
Well, they impact everybody I know and love, right? And I moved here from California because things got out of hand. And there was no check on the legislature. And it began to do things that were completely out of sync with what the everyday average person was experiencing. And that's my background, right? I grew up in Arizona, small town. We weren't rich. Things like this would, they would hit you. And this particular tax, it doesn't just hit you in the gas tank. I mean, if you, I call it a triple tax. It's a triple hidden tax right now that we know of. It's a triple, maybe way more than that. First of all, you see it in the gas prices because they've gone up so high, right? The only reason they've come down a little bit now is because they're doing this extraordinary auction that temporarily lowers the price now, but there's a limit on how much they can auction. So in the future, it's going to go up twice as fast. So they're playing games with us on the tax, the gas tax. If you go and buy groceries, every single thing that you have in the grocery store came on a truck that had to pay the gas, this hidden gas tax. And so now your eggs and your milk and your cheese prices are all up. And then we had hide the increase in your home heating cost, right? Yeah. With the Puget Sound. And I think that's just almost criminal that they're not putting that on there, but you're getting hit three times. So if your budget suddenly goes up 500, 600, 700 bucks a month, maybe that's a little high, but goes up 200 bucks a month for some people, that's a breaker.
It is. And I'll say just personally, Mike and I are doing fine financially, right? But for the first time, Mike got back from I won't say which grocery chain it was. Don't need to throw anybody under the bus. And he was like, that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And he's like, we need to go to Costco more. And like, so we've been, I went and I got like some of the bulk meals and we froze them into meals right, and stuff. Right. And that's right. Really the first time as a couple that I think we've had that, like, we're spending too much on groceries, you know, we're spending too much on gas. So let's talk about where this goes from here, right? So it's going to have to be certified to make sure you guys have enough signatures, et cetera. To me, there's really two likely scenarios. Either the legislature adopts it, or it goes to voters, right?
There's one more thing they can do. They can come up with their own version to compete with this.
Yes.
And try to put that on the ballot.
But either way, so
this goes on the ballot.
This goes on the ballot in 2024. Now, we would like, obviously, the legislature to say, hey, this is what people want, clearly. Let's just adopt it and move on. I think that's very unlikely. Do you share that sentiment?
Yes.
Okay. So your sell, the sell for this for folks when it hits the ballot in 2024 is very easy. Lower gas prices, like stop the hidden gas tax, right?
Right.
What do you anticipate being the counter to that? Like, well, let's get into that mode right now.
So they're already saying it, right? Well, the first thing they, do you hate the environment? And it's sort of this insinuation that I'm stepping on baby kittens and that kind of thing, right? that'll be the pitch. Oh, the environment, we're gonna lose. It's the Al Gore sort of pitch.
Yeah.
The problem with it for me, for them to make that with a straight face, and I don't know how they do it with a straight face, is that this thing is just a big money grab right now. They were hoping for over 2 years, $1 billion. They got $1 billion in 1 year. So now they've got this huge amount of money. And if you look at what they've done already, they're allocating the money to friends and possible supporters to study how to spend all the money. I can't imagine that if it's your own money, you don't give a bunch of money just to spend to figure out how to spend other people's money. Yeah. It's irresponsible.
And I'll just interrupt you and say, if you need to study how to spend the money, you don't need the money in the first
exactly.
place.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Amen.
Oh, it's insane. Do you anticipate personal attacks?
I'm already getting them.
Okay,
I'm already
such
getting
as?
Them. Lawyers for SEIU and WEA and those groups are filing frivolous PDC complaints. And they're clearly trying to weaponize the PDC to stop this.
Yeah.
So there's that. But then there's the stuff that you I'm sure you get a lot more of this than I do. But when people send me personal emails on the Let's Go Washington site to tell me to kill myself or call me, you know, the C word or whatever, I kind of go, what are you doing? Why is that going to stop me? I don't know. But it's coming in and I can see it's going to hit. So I think I'll probably get some personal vitriol and I'll get some organized labor coming after me. But
it's fascinating for exercising your rights under right, exactly. And this is built into our Constitution for a reason, to give people who I think feel very cut out by one party rule. This is the recourse, you know, they haven't been able to make a difference when they turn in their ballots. And this is a recourse for people who really feel crushed under so many of these taxes. And I thought about it. I was revisiting the Let's Go Wall website earlier. And, you know, you have them all classified under category like public safety. And this one's under cost of living. But think about that. The cost of living.
Yeah, like, yeah, right,
when
right.
I think about that, it's like, what is the cost the government puts on our ability to live,
right.
you know?
Right.
The timing of this is interesting, and I'm wondering if you think it's advantageous or troublesome. 2024 is a huge election year, right? And you know, I think Republicans, for instance, have a better chance than they've had in a long time of capturing the governor's office. So there's going to be a lot of money that's poured into trying to defeat this and some of the other initiatives if they move forward. How do you think that factors into the overall money pit that's spent on races?
It's not just the money, it's the airtime and the messaging as well, right? And we did this on purpose this year. What I learned last time, so I tried to do 11, right? Mm. Because why not? Last year. And last year was in the middle. We gathered signatures in an even election year. And I found out that I was running into that money issue. Mm. I was trying to recruit people to go and collect signatures, and everyone was busy. And so there was not a lot of attention. And I realized, no, the thing I need to do is run this in the odd year, and then it's on the ballot in the even year. Mm-hmm. And the benefit of that is multiple. One is that I think, and I spoke to some people. One of the people I spoke who's running in the left side of the aisle, and basically said to me that the agenda is Trump abortion, Trump abortion, Trump abortion, Trump abortion, right? But they're going to have to contend with six issues that people are fed up with, right?
Right.
And so I think, number one, we change the agenda. If we get all six, and I'm pretty confident that we'll get six of them on the ballot, that'll be unprecedented. So there's a different topic. The second thing is that money that usually would go to squash small candidates that can't raise much money is going to have to be spent on this if they they're going to have to spend it on something that's popular with people.
Yeah.
This isn't the go kill baby kittens law, right? This is how do you get to work? If you're commuting 30, 40, 50 miles a day, this law hits you every single day.
Yeah. And the other ones too, when you look at the making the long-term care tax optional, something that's also, you know, I know it's not as visible as pulling up to the gas pump because it's just coming out of your paycheck, but that's just one more thing that's hurting people. And it also alternatively, not only is it something that I think Republican candidates or common sense Democrats can use to campaign off of, but it is something that if the media is doing its job, it should be asking those Democratic candidates, where do you stand on these issues?
And long-term care is actually one that I think is especially poignant with that the media needs to be on this, because if you look at it, when it first went through the sort of the budgetary process, they do this, I'm not going to use technical speak because I don't even know the right words for it, but they sort of evaluated to see if it'll pass fiscal muster, and it wouldn't. It didn't several times. So they had to go back and rewire the thing. And when they did, there's several pieces that they put into it that to me are blatantly antagonistic to groups that the Democrat majority tends to claim that it protects.
Yeah.
The big one would be, there's a clause in there that says if you got to work for 10 years, right, to get credit for it. If you take 5 years and a day off, you have to start back over at year zero to get your 10 years again. Mm-hmm. And if one did a little bit of logic and said, well, geez, is it men or is it women that take 5 years off in the middle of their career to do something, I don't know, let's say have a baby, right? Mm-hmm. Well, clearly, right? This was not, there's no way that was intended. There's no way it was unintended. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
They knew what they were doing. This was designed to screw moms over.
Yeah. Well, and we had Elizabeth Hovedian with the Washington Policy Center to talk about some of those shortcomings. And she also said the same is true when it comes to, when you think about the very issue that long-term care is about, people who need to take time off to take care of an elderly loved one or a sick loved one.
Isn't that the irony? They're out of the system.
They don't even benefit from it later in life. And also poor people who are going to end up taking advantage of Medicaid. And so then they're not going to fall into that. So
they're just paying. They're paying for the middle class people to have 3 months of care that won't last.
Exactly.
Long enough.
So this one is being turned in an hour from now. Your drop dead deadline for signatures for all of these is?
The last date that we can turn anything in is December 29th.
December 29th. So we're going to just wait patiently to hear the other dates. I think this is going to make for a fascinating and busy 2024 election cycle.
We're going to change the topic. And it'll be, for once, it'll be the topic of what people are concerned about rather than whatever crazy thing Olympia wants to do.
Yeah, let's hope so. All right, Brian Haywood, letsgowa.com, letsgowa.com. They can find locations to be able to sign on the website.
And I would pitch a couple of things. Number one is the they're going to try to make these as partisan, but they're not. So take them home for Thanksgiving. You can actually talk about these for
yes,
Thanksgiving.
Talk them
right?
over.
Everybody in the family can sign them. Number two is, even though we're turning these in, this first batch in, we're not done. And so I'd encourage people, keep getting signatures and turn them in. That's a big thing is we found last year, in January, I would get a box of signatures turned in. I'm like, that's too late.
It's too late.
So turn them in now. Even if the whole thing's not filled out, turn them in now. Reach out to us. We'll arrange a way to pick them up, get them turned in, and then get another packet in and get the rest of your friends.
Great. All right, Brian Haywood, great work. Thanks for doing this on behalf of people who maybe don't have the time or resources to be able to do a huge scale operation like that. I think it's going to mean a lot for working class Washingtonians to be able to have a meaningful choice on these issues.
Thank you, Brandy. Appreciate all you're doing.
Yeah, so again, thank you to Brian Haywood for making time to come in. A big day certainly for him, for Let's Go Washington. And for people in Washington State who want a choice, this is really what this is about. There's a reason why the initiative and the referendum processes are there for us. It's so that if you have policies that have been passed by lawmakers that you don't like, that are negatively impacting you, there's a recourse for you. And I'd also say, you know, maybe you signed this one to repeal the cap and trade program, and you don't love all the other five initiatives that he has. That's fine. This is really about looking at, is there anything of these six initiatives that you want to either have the legislature fix or eventually go to voters? And so I will say, you know, go to letsgowa.com and look at the other initiatives that they're still collecting signatures on. This is also, by the way, the subject of our daily subscriber poll today on Patreon and Locals. I asked, I said, signatures for Initiative 2117 will be turned in today in an effort to repeal the cap and trade program. Of the remaining five initiatives that Let's Go Washington is collecting signatures for, which do you most want a chance to vote on? This might have been the hardest poll that people have ever taken on our page, because I saw all these comments about, how do I decide? Because there are good ones. There's so many good ones, in my opinion. I've signed all six of them, but the options of the last five, the five that are remaining, restore reasonable police pursuits, make long-term care tax optional, repeal the capital gains tax, prohibit a future state income tax, and improve parental notifications in education and healthcare. And so on Patreon and Locals right now, there's a wide array of opinions about which of those is the most important to see turned in next. Christopher Porter says, I voted for prohibiting a state income tax, but this poll is like asking me which child I want to survive. They are all about equally important, just about. I hope your children don't see this. TJ says, they're all important, but public safety must be the first priority. And right now, the restoring reasonable police pursuits is winning in our subscriber poll. Christy says, it's too difficult to pick which one of those I want on the ballot the most. They are also important to get to vote on. Restore Washington, group of which I support and help, has been desperately trying to get voters to sign the petitions for all of these. We just can't get enough signatures to qualify them. It's infuriating sometimes. We need voters to step up. But I actually think, according to what Brian said, is they feel like they're on track to be able to turn in signatures for all of these by the end of December. So that's very, very good news. Let's see a couple of responses from subscribers on Locals. Hunter Family says, hard to choose. I chose the long-term care tax because that's the one that's costing me money right now. It's coming out of your paycheck. Every other week, whenever you get paid, you look at it. There's going to be a line item there. Cookie says, I love all of these. However, Initiative 2081 is yet another attempt by government to divide parents from kids, which is dangerous. Look at China, the USSR, and other Marxist regimes. The government replaces parents and props up kids. Scary. So she said the most important one for her is Initiative 2081, which would restore parental notifications and your right to know what's happening with your kids at school, what's happening with your kids from a healthcare perspective. So keep voting on that poll. I'm very curious, and I'm sure Brian Haywood is curious as well, which of those initiatives you most want them to get enough signatures to turn in before the end of the year. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, it is a sad, sad day for transparency in Washington State. That from the Washington Coalition for Open Government. Let's talk about it in our segment on Freakin' Believable. Oop. So there has been an effort, really, from lawmakers, particularly as of late Democratic lawmakers, to hide documents from you, to tell you that they really don't care. If you want to know what they're doing in the legislature, they're going to use any means necessary to hide information from you. And for Washington voters, this goes back a long way. You know, it was Washington voters that first enacted the public records law that made it so that we had access to a bevy of records. Not only members of the media, but the public at large had access to what was happening in our state agencies, in our local entities, what elected leaders were doing. It's the way that we find out about so many cases of misfeasance and malfeasance is through the Public Records Act, which again is a product of the desires of voters in this state. And so for the last 20 or so years, there's been, and both parties are guilty of this, both parties are guilty. For a long time, lawmakers in Olympia, Republicans, Democrats, they were arguing that we're immune from this. We're immune from the Public Records Act. We don't have to turn over documents in the same way that all these other elected officials and agencies do. And so eventually a judge ruled that no, that's not the case. You do actually have to turn over records. And so at that point, Republicans kind of let the issue go. But then when you had this very reliable Democratic trifecta in Olympia, you started to see them try to find other ways to withhold records. And news agencies were suing over this, rightfully so. And one of the things they recently started to exert is a claim of legislative privilege. We've talked about this on the show, especially in the past year, quite a bit, where journalists were putting in requests and then they'd get things back that were heavily redacted. And the reason given for the redaction was legislative privilege, which they say is something in the state constitution that protects kind of their work product. You know, if they're having discussions behind the scenes, it protects that, and they can keep that from the people who pay their salaries. And media entities were like, that you're making that up. That isn't a thing. And so you've had this real effort that I think is only possible. I think lawmakers only feel emboldened to work so hard to keep information from you if they feel like their seats are safe. And when you've had this Democratic majority, one-party rule for so long, they genuinely are to the point where they don't think there are consequences. They don't think there are implications for them when it comes to an election year. So that's why they're doing this. And that's why you're seeing it from Democrats and not from Republicans at this juncture. So really disappointed to see that the issue of legislative privilege appears to be upheld by a judge. The Seattle Times headline, judge rules Washington lawmakers can withhold documents via legislative privilege. It says Friday's ruling came in a lawsuit filed in April by the Coalition for Open Government and Jamie Nixon, an open government advocate who worked on the state's 2021 redistricting committee against the state of Washington. In the case, Seattle Times reporter Jim Bruner submitted a declaration stating he had requested records related to the state's drug possession bill, also known as the Blake bill. The records ended up being heavily redacted. After hearing arguments from each side for about 30 minutes, Judge Ann Egler issued an order saying lawmakers may withhold, quote, records revealing internal legislative deliberations concerning bills contemplated or introduced in either the House or the legislature, or in either house of the legislature. And that's wild to me. So this judge is saying that if you have lawmakers sending emails back and forth about crafting a bill, about whether they're going to support it or not, about changes to the bill, that they can lump that under legislative privilege and they can black it out when a member of the media is seeking that information, no matter how long after the deliberations that information is sought. That is wild. And I agree with the Coalition for Open Government. This is a dark, dark day for transparency in Washington state. And it is being led and perpetrated by a single political party. I'll also say, Governor Jay Inslee, to his credit, he has said and he has promised that he is not going to use legislative privilege. And so I want to give the governor a lot of credit for that. You know, I know his time in office is coming for an end, but he said that last year, or end of 2022, and we gave him credit for it at the time. But you have Democrats in Olympia who are so eager to hide information from you that they wanted this to go to court, that they wanted this to go to a lawsuit, to go to court, because what they thought, well, the chances are pretty good, we'll get a friendly judge. So this is wild stuff. The Seattle Times article goes on to say the Washington Coalition for Open Government secretary said that the exemption has in the past been applied haphazardly and the definition has been vague. He worried the state was about to enter a new era of lack of transparency, especially in the legislature. It's elected officials who gather together to craft public policy in the people's house, he said. Where's the secrecy in that? The state legislature is not a private country club. And I could not agree more. And I'm very grateful to the Coalition for Open Government and some of the media entities that have really, over a period of like 10 years, been pushing back and fighting back against this, because ultimately it just hurts you. Ultimately, when you're talking about something like the Blake Bill, which again was the deliberations to decide whether we should recriminalize drug possession in our state, which has so many implications for everyone. To say that you can hide information on those deliberations from the media, from the public, it's really, really, really concerning. And one of the things I know that we're going to do, and I'm sure other media outlets are going to do, is push for individual lawmakers, push for caucuses to say on the record whether they are going to use legislative privilege or not. Just like Governor Jay Inslee, he said he's not going to do it. So if he does it, that's going to be a problem, right? Because he'll be going against his word. But for Republicans in the House and Senate, for Democrats in the House and Senate, which of those caucuses are going to be willing to say on the record and tell the people of Washington that even though this one-off judge says, yeah, it's okay to hide information from the people who pay your salaries, that they're not going to do it because they don't think it's right. So I want to see that commitment, certainly if it hasn't happened already, from the Republican caucuses in the House and the Senate. And I also want to at least have the question posed, and we will do it, to Democrats in the House and the Senate, to see if there are individual lawmakers who will make that commitment, and to see if there are full caucuses that will make that commitment. And the same is true for everyone else who would be covered by this real phony legislative privilege business. I mean, years of this. And we go on a total tangent here. But how many times have we talked about how, gosh, was in the 70s? Daryl, can you Google this for me quick? When it was that Washington voters passed our current abortion allowances? I feel like it was in the 70s. And the Public Records Act, I believe, was 1972. How many times during the abortion debate have people said, well, the voters of Washington...
November 4th, 1970.
70. So, thank you. How many times, you know, in the abortion debate have people on both sides said, well, this is what the voters want. They want, you know, abortion to be allowed up to the point of fetal viability. And this is the will of voters. And Democrats don't question that. Democrats don't question the will of voters when it comes to abortion access. So why are Democrats questioning the will of the voters when it comes to public records? This was passed by voters. This is what voters wanted. You don't question it on one issue because it fits your ideology. You question it on another issue because you want to be able to operate in a public job in secrecy. I'm telling you then, public office is not for you. If you're claiming to be a servant, a public servant, that is not serving the public. So this is what we will do. We will make an effort to get every single member of the House and Senate in Washington State on the record. Will you use legislative privilege or not? Yes or no? And we will publish a list of those who say yes. We will publish a list of those who say no. And we will publish what I'm sure will be a very, very lengthy list of all the Democrats who do not respond. And the person who will be on the no list will be Governor Jay Inslee. And we will continue to give him credit as long as he stays true to his word. Absolutely freaking unbelievable. Shameful. Okay, I saw a headline that I'm interested in talking to Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital about later this week because it's something he warned about. And I'm like, man, he was spot on. I saw these predictions that the commercial real estate market is about to really hit a bad spot. And, you know, you looked at the pandemic and work from home and all of that. So it's not necessarily a surprise, but Zach was talking about that on the show weeks ago. And so Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark, they really, I feel like, are taking an honest look at the state of the economy, at the state of the market. And what they specialize in is risk management, making sure all this work that you've put in to save for retirement is not for nothing when the economy eventually comes crumbling down. Here's Zach Abraham.
We think the world is going insane. We think that the world is propped up on all kinds of, you know, we know, propped up printed money. And you're playing a game that has to end badly, right? Now, when it ends, when you hear all these prognosticators financially talking about when it ends, it kind of reminds me of when God's coming back. Nobody knows, right? But what it does mean is that you need a portfolio that can do two things. It can keep up with inflation and not get you buried. But also, when the inevitability of living and perpetuating an economy on printed money, when that inevitability comes to the fore, you need a portfolio that can stand up against anything, right?
Yeah, and the time to manage your risk is not when it's too late. The time to manage your risk is not when we start to see the headlines of, you know, being in a recession, et cetera. It's now. And certainly there are some indicators, as Zach talks about on the show every week, about some of the things, you know, defaults on credit cards, what he's talking about with commercial properties, et cetera. There are some clear signs that we're heading towards some really troubling economic times. So reach out to Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital, but you can also listen to his radio show every week, knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. He talks about these things. He gives a lot of great advice. And so there's really no reason to be caught off guard, especially when it comes to something as critical as your retirement. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. All right, dipping outside of Washington State. Oh my gosh, I'm so tired of Gavin Newsom. Oh my God, I'm so tired of Gavin Newsom pretending that he's not going to run for president. It's just draining my lifeblood out of me. And now we have to watch a debate between Gavin Newsom and Ron DeSantis. Why do we care about watching a debate between the governor of California, who swears up and down that he's not running for president, and Ron DeSantis, who's also not going to be president? It's just, it's so much. Fox has announced details for their DeSantis-Newsom debate, which had been teased back in September, but now we know it's going to happen on November 30th. It's going to be led by, according to The Hill, by primetime pundit Sean Hannity. It's going to be presented live from Georgia. There will not be an audience in attendance, which I tend to like. And that's fair to Gavin Newsom, because I'm sorry, if Sean Hannity has an audience, a live audience for a Fox News debate, like, I feel like there'll be a lot of booing when Gavin Newsom speaks.
It'll be a bit one-sided.
It'll be a bit one-sided. Fox News says the goal of the event is to examine the vastly different approaches the two governors have and offer insights into their political philosophies as well as ambitions for the nation. The network said, previewing that Hannity will highlight a variety of issues in each state, including the economy, the border, immigration, crime, and inflation. Okay. Now, I get it. I think it is interesting, and maybe I'm being too harsh on this debate. I'm just so sick of Gavin Newsom saying he's not going to run for president, so I think that's where that's coming from. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of differences between Florida and California. There's a lot of differences between Florida and Washington State. It's why we do our weekly segment, Florida Report, so we can see what kind of stuff's happening in Florida and compare it to the stuff that's happening in Washington. So maybe that will be of interest. I just wish that both sides were doing it with their cards on the table. You know, this whole conspiracy that I believe totally exists to, at the last minute, pull Biden out of the presidential contention and then replace him with Gavin Newsom. I digress. But also Newsom, I mean, going back a couple years now, he's been running political ads in Florida, you know, talking about how great California is. You remember those? And then he recently ran one, and this has been running in anticipation of this Fox News debate. It's an abortion ad in Florida by Gavin Newsom that's attacking Florida's 6-week abortion ban.
Wanted by order of Governor Ron DeSantis. Any woman who has an abortion after 6 weeks and any doctor who gives her care will be guilty of a felony. Abortion after 6 weeks will be punishable by up to 5 years in prison. Even though many women don't even know they're pregnant at 6 weeks. That's not freedom. It's Ron DeSantis' Florida.
Campaign for Democracy PAC is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Now, I'll trigger some people, and I agree that's not freedom. As someone who is pro-choice, I don't think a 6-week abortion ban before most women know they're pregnant is freedom. And I've been critical of Ron DeSantis for pushing through things that, to me, are the opposite of freedom. He's done some things I like, but this is one that I think is far too extreme. And also, it hurts Republicans in states like Washington when you hear about some extreme restriction on abortion in another Republican, in a Republican stronghold. And then people here are like, well, I don't want that to happen. And they conflate it falsely. Anyway, so abortion is sure to come up. I just, you know, this whole idea that Gavin Newsom is not trying to position himself as a presidential candidate, and also that Ron DeSantis would do this. I mean, Ron DeSantis has been flailing in the polls for the Republican presidential nomination. He's far behind Donald Trump. I guess he's in the middle of trying to compete against other Republicans who are actually running for president. So what good does debating someone who's not running for president do for him? It's all quite confusing to me. But I'm still going to watch it. I'm still going to watch it, right? I'm sure we'll still talk about it on the show. But yeah, it's just, you know, going to China, doing state visits, visiting the White House, running political ads in other states, going to Iowa and swing states, all of that, and Gavin Newsom's like, oh no, I don't want to be president. Get over yourself. Ridiculous. Okay, before we get to questions and comments from the live stream, we'll bring Daryl in for that. Man, I've just been cutting Daryl out, putting baby in a corner today. If you are interested in maybe looking at saving some money on insurance, everyone needs insurance, right? I highly recommend taking the FirstMark Challenge. Not only is it a local company, a veteran-owned, they've been doing this for a really long time, and you don't pay FirstMark anything for their services. Mike and I took the FirstMark Challenge in the spring. It's simple. You schedule some time virtually to talk to them. You talk about your insurance needs. You talk about, you know, is it you need more coverage? You need to save some money. They go out, they shop the market for you. They come back a couple weeks later. They make their recommendations, and you get to decide what to do from there. Dave Taylor, the CEO of FirstMark, says the service they provide, admittedly, it's not going to happen in 15 minutes or less.
How much time did it take for you?
A couple hours.
Okay. So total. All in a couple hours. Yep. From the time we gather the information, do the presentation, and go through everything, it's a couple hours of time, right? And so, and I would say that's probably on the high end, right?
It ranges. We were chatty. We were very chatty.
A little chatty, yes, exactly. Anywhere from an hour to 2 hours is the investment in time to find out, and there's no obligation. There's no extra fees if you become a FirstMark client. We are paid the same way every other insurance agency in the state of Washington is paid. We're paid by the insurance company that is the writer of your business. And so, yeah, there's nothing to lose.
Yeah, and the service you get is just remarkable. You know, you might still, even if you go with FirstMark, have, you know, your homeowners insurance and vehicles and life insurance, whatever, all under different companies. But you know who you call? You call FirstMark. Call FirstMark first if you need to file a claim, if you have questions. And being able to do that in one centralized place, I mean, saves you so much time and energy. So give FirstMark Insurance a try. Take the FirstMark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com. You don't have anything to lose. And the best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. All right, let's get to questions and comments. I was saying you guys on the chats today are being funny. You're so funny. Let's see, Daryl, we got you in focus today.
Yeah.
Wow.
That way.
Hashtag blessed. All right. Tacoma renter protections that were just passed. Jason Baker says, I'm reading a book about housing right now. It's called Fixer Upper, How to Repair America's Broken Housing Systems. These laws in Tacoma will blow the housing market to crap. Yeah, I agree. And it's actually something I was talking about Wes Jones with the last time he was in taping with us for spots. And we'll have to have him back in to do a segment on this, because some of the clients that they're working with are landlords who don't want to rent their homes anymore and are just selling them.
Yeah. I thought maybe I would want to be a landlord one day. Not in Washington.
No, absolutely not. If I ever thought I wanted to be a landlord, the Jason Roth living in his van Airbnb story was
not
enough to
Washington.
Be like, no.
No.
So if you are a landlord and you're like, I'm going to sell with West.com. Sell with West.com. Two Ladies Midwest Adventures says, Brandy, as a past landlord, two tenants destroyed everything in less than 1 year, had to give the house back to the bank. Oh my gosh, that's insane. Tim Clemenson says, July will be the month of the year where landlords will be able to declare independence. I assume that you mean like if you had people who were trying to say that they had school kids and so you can't evict them during the school year, which is true, but also consider how long the backlog is for the eviction process.
Nothing moves fast.
Nothing moves fast. I mean, look at Jason Roth. He's looking at maybe March, possibly, you know, a year and a half.
His lawyer said years.
Could be years. Could be years of him having to deal with this situation and, you know, just paying a mortgage on a house he's getting no income from. So you might have someone who uses the system to their advantage for the entire school year.
Yep.
And then as the landlord, you can't start the eviction process until the summer months, right?
Yep.
And how long is that going to take? And then even the King County Sheriff's Office was telling Jason Roth, even if a judge eventually rules in your favor, we're backlogged. It's going to take us months to serve an eviction. Who would want to be a landlord?
Crazy.
If you are a small landlord and you actually aren't concerned by this, please reach out to us on dividedpod.com, because I really genuinely want to hear why you're not freaked the heck out. Gil says, why rent in Gil Corazon? I love that name. Why rent in the Pacific Northwest? The rules are too expensive. They will be abused. I think of that poor landlord living in his van while his tenant lives rent-free and using it as an Airbnb.
Yep. And then we have Carlene Heath. The housing market and foreclosures will explode in Tacoma. I do feel sorry for renters who will be priced out, but I do feel sorry for homeowners / landlords who just got screwed by the people of Tacoma.
Yep. Yeah, and it's not that I have no sympathy for how high rents are.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, that's why people move further away from big cities.
Yeah.
You know, there's not everyone who's working class who is working a full-time job can afford an apartment in Seattle. That's just the reality of it. It shouldn't mean that you get to stay there.
But you know how to keep rent down?
How?
By providing affordable housing. You know how to do that?
Oh, yeah. How?
Small landlords.
Yeah, it's great. Can I tell you a story that my brother will kill me for sharing?
Okay.
So my brother doesn't live in the state, my older brother, but he's very handy, you know, and he works on construction sites and stuff. He had this guy who like did him dirty on something like personally, like screwed him over. So my brother, he must just have, I don't know how the way his mind works, but he's, I can't believe I'm sharing this. He goes, you know, I was thinking about how I could get back at him. He said, I think I'm going to go volunteer my time to fix up all the homes around his and his neighborhood so that his rent goes up and he can't afford it anymore.
Oh my goodness.
Well, that's kind of nice, you know, for the people. He's like, I'm going to paint houses for free. I'm going to fix fences.
Don't mess with someone who has nothing but time on their hands.
Oh, my gosh, oh my older brother. Okay, on Jonathan Cho's Vindication, Matthew Cook says Gabriel Jones is crying over a pizza bucket in his parents' basement. That's true. On the initiatives, there was a sentiment that I should have asked Brian Haywood about. That was on me for not asking about it because I see it a lot in the comments. And that's whether, even if voters pass these things, whether it'll stand up. Because we talked about $30 car tabs.
Yeah.
And will they find some legal maneuver to say it's unconstitutional? Bunky said, if any of these initiatives actually get to the voters and pass, the state Supreme Court will just overturn them.
Sad.
Possible. Sharon had a similar sentiment. Brian Haywood is about to be Imond. Yeah. Let's see. I will say, I mean, it was Bob Ferguson who really went after and ruined Tim Imond's life. Mm-hmm. I think Bob Ferguson will be very hands-off on these in 2024.
Yeah, I mean, it's an election year.
It's an election year for him. These are going to be popular among voters. Yep. So if he's trying to go after, ruin Brian Haywood's life, try to find legal maneuvering to write these in a way and make sure they're written in a way where they fail, I don't think he's going to do that. I think he's going to be hands-off because that would be the strategic thing to do.
Yep.
So that's beneficial. I still want to see him put on the record as to where he stands on all of these things.
He will go in the ignore pile.
Oh, he will go in the didn't respond.
Did not respond.
Yeah, and by... I'm going to do that. I'm going to make Nicole do that when she gets back from vacation. That'll be her first task.
Let's just text her right now.
Yeah, let's just actually, while she's in Costa Rica, let's have her. You know, she texted me last night, how'd the show go today? I didn't respond. Because she does not need to be thinking about work. Daryl is here. Nicole, enjoy Costa Rica. Yes, because it's the last vacation I'm letting you have for years. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, all right, before we get to our closing sanity check, which... Oh my gosh, GASP is actually a school who responds appropriately when children spew hateful messaging. Eastside Weight Loss Clinic, it's Thanksgiving on Thursday. I know the last thing on some of your minds is starting a new weight loss program, and that's fine, but I'm sure on Friday you'll be thinking real hard about starting a new weight loss journey. Look, I started my journey on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program November 1st of last year. I knew that Thanksgiving was ahead. I knew that Christmas was ahead, but still, in the last 2 months of 2022, I managed to lose almost 30 pounds. On the program. That is because it is not some, you know, fad diet. It is a program that's designed to teach you what to eat in the right portions and how to make it fit into your life, how to make it fit into holidays and events and weddings, and how to get back on track if you fall off, because we all know that we have those moments of weakness. So if you've been contemplating it, I'm not saying you got to start the program on Thanksgiving, but maybe on Black Friday, you schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Look, not every weight loss program is right for every person. So if you do that consultation and you just think, ah, that's not something I'm going to be able to do, then no harm, no foul. It doesn't cost you a dime. All right. There was a walkout of some students at Mount Si High School. And I have to say, I'm very impressed with how the school district responded. Let's get to it in our closing sanity check. This is the second time in just, what, 2 weeks? We've talked about something happening over in the Mount Si school district. So this is at Mount Si High School. And, you know, that far out of Seattle, I always hope for sanity. You know, I always hope that when you get maybe a 30-minute buffer out of Seattle, sanity prevails. So when I initially saw some posts and I had a parent of a student at Mount Si email me this, there was a student planned walkout for Palestine. Oh, I was like, on Mount Si, out in East King County, really? A walkout for Palestine? They said they were going to meet at the Career Center, move to the bus loop. It said, show up with friends. Everyone is welcome. Wear your kafia. I never knew how to say that. Kafifa. You know, it's like a Hamas. You're going to wear your Hamas.
Yeah, I'm not even going to try to pronounce
it. I look to Daryl like, how do I say that? Kafia. Palestinian color flags, posters, etc. So there are some parents like, what the heck? Kids are going to walk out in support of Palestine. And of course, there's this. And it doesn't say that this is in support of a ceasefire. That's one thing. If you're like, hey, we need to, you know, stop the hostilities. People are dying. Israelis have died. There's innocent Palestinians who are dying. No, whenever I hear it's like a walkout or a protest for Palestine, I'm like, okay, that's anti-Semitic. And so here's some kids. Now, apparently it was a very small group of students that participated in this. And I saw a lot of posts from parents on community pages saying, hey, most of the kids were respectful and all of that. But the school released a statement about what led up to this and also what they're going to do in response to it. Because before I get to the school statement, I've said this for a long time on, you know, when Seattle Public School students were walking out for basically anything. And I remember, I think it was climate change. They were going to walk out for climate change. And then there were some walkouts to protest police brutality. And parents and some teachers were saying, well, you can't punish them for walking out, though. You can't put them in detention or issue suspensions. And I thought, what kind of lesson is that for these kids? Because even if I don't agree with what they're walking out for, you can't stop kids from walking out, but you can teach them that sometimes if you really believe in something, let's say, sometimes you're going to have to stand up for what you believe in, even though there are consequences. And so to say, oh, kids can walk out for whatever, you know, suits them, and then there's no, don't worry, you won't get in trouble for it, that's ridiculous, because then you're not weeding out individuals who just are going to walk out because they want to get out of class that day. So you're not weeding out people who don't actually care about the issue. But you're also not teaching the kids that, yeah, sometimes if you believe in something, there are going to be consequences for it. And sometimes free speech does not mean freedom from consequences. And that is what I think the Mount Si School District is now articulating to these kids and to parents. So they sent out an email to families who have kids at Mount Si. It says, we're writing to provide a follow-up to our earlier message about a potential student-led walkout. A small percentage of our students participated in the walkout from 2:30 p.m. As mentioned in our previous communication, the Mount Si High School administrative team met with student organizers in advance to review the Snoqualmie Valley School District policies regarding students' freedom to assemble and freedom of expression. While the students followed expectations for physical safety, unfortunately, not all of the expectations outlined regarding student expression were followed during the event. As a result, the school is opening an investigation into the actions of students to determine if any district policies were violated. If a violation of district policies can be determined, then appropriate disciplinary action will be taken by the school. The safety and well-being of all students, staff, and families in the district is the district's utmost priority. While we support students' rights to assemble and their freedom of expression, we simultaneously honor our students' rights to attend school in an environment free from discrimination. Please know that we remain committed to fostering a safe and respectful learning environment for all of our students, staff, and community members. That is a very sane response from a school district to something like this. They, and what I've seen on parental groups, is that the school district is potentially looking at the possibility that some of these students engaged in hate speech by chanting things like from the river to the sea, which would suggest, even if the students have no clue what that means, which I imagine most of them don't, that they want the erasure of the state of Israel, which can be looked at as being anti-Semitic. And so I'm happy to see this school district went to the kids, said, look, I know you're going to do a walkout. We can't stop students physically from walking out of the school, but here's our policies. Here's the rules. Here's what you can and cannot do. And on the back end, when they believe that some of the students violated those rules, there's now going to be an investigation. And there might be disciplinary action for these students. So, hey, if you had kids who really believe that they were out there standing up for something they believed in, fine. This is America. But it does not mean, and this school district is now reiterating that, it does not mean that you're free from consequences, and that is a very important lesson for those kids. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. We'll do it. We are going to be back on the live show tomorrow. Daryl, you will be here.
Yep.
On the live show tomorrow, we'll have no show on Thanksgiving. Mm-mm. However, we'll have a regular episode of Sundays with Subscribers, a really fantastic one for you coming up this Sunday. So we'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon. If you have not signed up already to become an Undivided subscriber, help us continue to grow this mission and this movement to give common sense a comeback. You can sign up at UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. The cost is just $5 a month. All right, we'll see you back here tomorrow. Noon.
Noon.
Noon. I like boop. Your little boop. Boop. Did Daryl has made a sound drop of my boop, boop. Good, Daryl. He's very excited about it. You can hit it one more time before we go. Boop.
Thanks, y'all.